Good afternoon. If you want to be turning in your Bibles to Philippians chapter 2, we're going to begin there in our lesson here this afternoon, Philippians chapter 2. Last Sunday afternoon, Brother L.A. preached a lesson on walking in Jesus' steps. There's a number of songs in our hymnals that relate to that theme. As we think about the lesson, Brother Dave led this morning, Footprints of Jesus, and songs like Stepping in the Light, and Oh to Be Like Thee, and other songs such as this. This is a theme that we understand as a key part of God's will for us, and Brother L.A. made a lot of good points along this theme last Sunday afternoon. There's a number of points that can be made in consideration of our need to follow Jesus' footsteps, but what I want to do here this afternoon is to look at a very specific part of that, and that is considering five character traits of Jesus that are a part of who he is, things that are first and foremost a part of his heart and things that were demonstrated by the various acts that he did and the words that he spoke as he was here on this earth. We'll look at these five different character traits as we go through our lesson here this afternoon. But I want to begin by just noticing something that is said there in Philippians chapter 2. And in verse 5, after commanding the Christians at Philippi to put on humility and love in the two preceding verses, and we'll come back to those a little bit later on in our lesson, the inspired Apostle Paul goes on to say, have this mind in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. And so he notes there as he talks about things that are first and foremost a matters of the mind, matters of the heart, things that are first and foremost a part of who we are on the inside. He says Jesus is the perfect example of having a heart that is what it ought to be. And he says, follow his lead in this. Have the mindset that Jesus showed as we look at his character that's demonstrated throughout his life as he was here on this earth. And we'll come back to that passage in Philippians 2 in just a moment, but as we think about our need to imitate Jesus' character, to have a heart like Jesus, to have a frame of mind like Jesus, we understand that first and foremost, the characteristic of Jesus that we ought to strive to follow, that is at the foundation of the others, is this need for us to imitate Jesus' love. And that's the first characteristic I want to consider here in our lesson this afternoon. If you look over in John chapter 13, as Jesus was speaking there to his disciples shortly before his crucifixion, he told them there in verse 34, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another. And I'm going to stop there for just a moment. The old law commanded the Israelites to love others. And so this was not the new part of the commandment, Jesus saying you need to love one another. But if we read the last part of the verse, we see what's new about this commandment. He says, just as I have loved you, you also love one another. And so what's new about this commandment is Jesus is saying you are to follow my example. Not just love your neighbor as yourself, but love others as I have loved you. Look to my perfect example of what love is, Jesus says, and follow that example that I'm setting for you. And he goes on to say then in verse 35, he says, by this shall all men know that you're my disciples, if you have love one to another. There's no more significant part of showing to the world who Jesus is and that we are his followers than by loving as he has shown love toward us. There is no more primary characteristic of Jesus than that of love. And when we love others, we show that we are his faithful disciples. And as you think about this need to love others as Jesus has loved us and the depth of what's involved in that command that Jesus gives there, notice what is said over in 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and in verse 9. 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and in verse 9, here in these two chapters, in 2 Corinthians 8 and 9, the inspired Apostle Paul talks about the need to have a benevolent heart, the need to have the type of heart that will lead us to be willing to give to others when situation is appropriate, even when it's things that might cost us some time or money or some push us out of our comfort zone or whatever it may be. There's things that might be uncomfortable for us, but yet it's something that we realize is needful and beneficial for others. He says you need to have the kind of benevolent heart that will lead you to do that. And in the context of this, he notes here in 2 Corinthians 8 and verse 9, the perfect example we can look to of one having this kind of heart. He says, "For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, that you through his poverty might become rich." And so he says, think about the example of Jesus. And I don't think he's saying here Jesus walked on earth as a really poor man materially so that you could all be wealthy materially. But when he talks about Jesus becoming poor, think about how Jesus, before he descended to this earth, he has existed from eternity and was there in heaven with God. He had what we're trying to get, a home in heaven with God. And he temporarily gave that up, lowered himself literally by descending to this earth and living as a man. And as a man, he lived a very modest life. He didn't seek vainglory for himself. He didn't seek great earthly riches. But instead, he would just simply constantly think about others. He would think about the Father's will, and he would think about, what do others need from me? How can I help others? And he did all of this so that you and I can be spiritually rich. And so that example of selflessness on the part of Jesus is the example for us to follow. That's the type of heart that we ought to have as we consider the example of Jesus. And that ties back in with what we see over there in Philippians chapter 2. If you turn back over there and notice what is said just before the verse we read a moment ago in Philippians chapter 2, notice what is said there in verse 4 of Philippians chapter 2. The inspired apostle Paul there commands these brethren at Philippi, not looking each of you to his own things, but each of you also to the things of others. And he says this right before, saying, have this mind in you which was in Christ Jesus. This was Jesus' frame of mind. As he walked this earth, he was always thinking about others, looking out for the interests of others. He was always thinking, first and foremost, what's the Father's will for me? Instead of centering his life around what do I want to get out of my life? What pleases me? He centered his life around this question of what pleases the Father, and secondly, and what really works hand in hand with that, is what is beneficial for others. And that's that example that we ought to strive to follow, having that benevolent heart, that loving heart that Jesus has perfectly exemplified. But as we think about a second characteristic that Jesus perfectly exemplifies, it's brought out there in Philippians chapter 2 as well, and goes hand in hand with this love or this selflessness, and that is Jesus' perfect demonstration of humility. The Greek word for humble is a word that refers to a flattening. It's a word that refers to like the flattening of a hill. And when we're talking about our need to humble ourselves, we're talking about our need to lower ourselves properly by not esteeming ourselves or exalting ourselves too highly, but instead having a proper view of ourselves in relation to God and others, and seeking to exalt Him and benefit others rather than seeking the preeminence. And we see that exemplified as we think about Jesus. If you move on down to verses 6 through 8 there of Philippians chapter 2, Philippians 2 verses 6 through 8, the inspired apostle Paul there mentions Jesus existing in the form of God, counted not the being on an equality with God a thing to be grasped. That's simply saying he is deity. And so he is deity, and yet verse 7 says he emptied himself, taking the form of a servant, being made in the likeness of men. And being found in fashion as a man, he humbled himself, becoming obedient even unto death, yea, the death of the cross. And so notice at least three things said there in those verses about how Jesus humbled himself. First of all, he is deity, yet he descended to this earth and lived as a man. That in itself was a great act of humility. But then to take it a step further, Jesus, though he is divine, subjected himself to the will of the Father and said, I'm not going to be my own ruler in life, so to speak. I'm going to let the Father rule my life and tell me what to do and guide my steps. And that was another great act of humility. You think about the fact that you and I are just created beings, and yet we have not obeyed God perfectly. Jesus is deity. He is God the Son. Yet he humbled himself to the point of perfectly obeying the will of the Father. That's another great example of what it means to humble oneself. And then he goes further there in Philippians chapter 2 and verse 8 and mentions him becoming obedient even to the point of death by crucifixion on the cross. And so he was willing to be obedient to the point of dying a humiliating death by crucifixion, which is at least a third thing brought out in these verses about how Jesus demonstrated great humility. But the point here is that attitude of humility that Jesus had, where he wasn't seeking vainglory, he wasn't seeking to be served. Certainly, we should serve Jesus, and there's a sense in which Jesus sought after that. But Jesus, the point is, as he was here on this earth, was not trying to get a lot of earthly popularity or notoriety or preeminence or whatever it may be. Instead, he humbled himself and sought to serve, which was his very purpose in coming to this earth and in doing the various things that we see him doing. And so that example of humility is one that we ought to strive to follow. If you look up there in verse 3 of Philippians chapter 2, there the inspired apostle Paul says, doing nothing through faction or through vainglory, but in lowliness of mind. That's what humility is, each counting other better than himself. Just like Jesus had that lowliness of mind, though he is deity, though he is superior to us, he was willing to lower himself by descending to this earth and by serving mankind. That example of humility we ought to strive to follow, not seeking selfish ambition, but instead counting others better than self in that lowliness of mind, that humble attitude that we see exemplified in Jesus. One act of humility that I want to turn in read here this afternoon that we see in Jesus is brought out over in John chapter 13. In John chapter 13, we have here in the first 15 verses or so of this chapter, Jesus washing his disciples' feet. And it's really interesting to me, the preface to this passage before the writer gets into Jesus washing the disciples' feet. Notice what it says about Jesus there in John chapter 13 and in verse 3. It says there, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands and that he came forth from God and goeth unto God. So notice there it points out, Jesus understood the power and authority that was being given to him. He understood that he came from God. In other words, he knew that unlike you and I, he existed and has existed from eternity and was already there in heaven at the right hand of the Father. And he knew that he was going back there. He knew that he was soon going to die and then be resurrected ultimately all the way up into heaven to be at the right hand of the Father. And yet we see that though Jesus understood this, these things that make him superior to us, he still chose to humble himself to the point of acting as a servant, being a servant as he was here on earth. And that's exemplified as we go on to read this account of Jesus washing his disciples' feet in the next few verses. And when you get down to verse 12 there of John 13, it says, so when he had washed their feet and taken his garments and sat down again, he said to them, know ye that what I have done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you say, well, for so I am. If I then, the Lord and the teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. Verse 15, he goes on to say, for I've given you an example that you should also do as I have done to you. In other words, this example of servitude is one that I want you to follow. Servitude may not be manifested today by washing one another's feet, but we ought to still be servants is the point, just as Jesus exemplified here in this passage. And so we see here again, Jesus, we have studied before in Matthew 20 when he talks about how the rulers of this earth tend to seek the preeminence, tend to lord it all over others. And striving after and acquiring that preeminence is seen as something that is great. But Jesus points out, I'm here on this earth, not seeking to be served, but rather seeking to serve. I'm here truly doing great things for the Father, and I want you to follow my lead in this. Have that humility to not be seeking the preeminence and exalting self above others, but instead seeking to serve as Jesus is seen here doing and is the perfect example of. But a third characteristic of Jesus that we want to strive to emulate, and this one again follows up upon the first two, love and humility, is the characteristic of meekness. As we see in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 5, Jesus was speaking there in the Sermon on the Mount. At the beginning of that sermon in what we call the Beatitudes, he was speaking about the person who's blessed in the eyes of God. And he points out there in that verse, verse 5 of Matthew 5, "Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth." And though meekness is often viewed as a weakness before, we've pointed out it's actually shown here to be a sign of great strength. And there's no better example of the fact that meekness is a sign of great strength than what we have in Matthew the 11th chapter and in verse 29. Because there Jesus says, "Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I, Jesus says, am meek and lowly in heart, and you shall find rest unto your souls." Jesus says, "I am meek." Jesus is the strongest person spiritually speaking to ever walk this earth, and yet he says that he himself is meek, and that was echoed in the triumphant entry a little bit later on as well. And so a third characteristic that we see Jesus perfectly exemplifying is this characteristic of meekness. And as we think about meekness, I've tried different times to think about how best to express this and define this and wrap our minds around this. And I don't know if this is a perfect definition, but I think this gets at a lot of the concept of what biblical meekness is about. It really is the opposite of self-assertiveness. Somebody who is self-assertive is directly opposed to somebody who is meek. When you think about the meekness that we're to direct towards God, we're to have an attitude towards God that says, "God, I'm willing to let you mold me and make me after your will. I'm not living here on earth just saying, well, what's my will for my life? Whatever I want to do, that's what I'm going to choose. Instead, I'm saying, no, what's God's will for my life? I'm going to let him have his way with me and do whatever he wills for my life." That's an attitude of meekness towards God that Jesus perfectly exemplified, as we see time and again. He had this attitude of, "Not my will, but yours be done." It was incredibly painful for Jesus to endure all the sufferings he faced, but he said, "Not my will, yours, Father, be done." And that's an attitude we ought to emulate. And also, when you think about our treatment of others, meekness, again, in a lot of ways is the opposite of self-assertiveness. Instead of being someone who insists on getting our way all the time, we ought to have that spirit, that attitude that is willing to yield when the situation calls for it. Not compromising truth, Jesus didn't do that, but having an attitude in areas that won't compromise truth that says, "I'm willing to yield to others, not constantly just looking to get my way, but I'm willing to yield to others when it is appropriate to do so." Jesus, again, perfectly exemplified that as we see his interaction with others when there were things that would have been more pleasant and comfortable for him to do, but there were things that were needed from others. He would seek to do what he could for others, putting them first. That ties in, again, with the attitude of love and selflessness, but it also ties in with this attitude of meekness that Jesus perfectly exemplified. But a fourth characteristic of Jesus that we ought to strive to imitate, that we're going to consider here this afternoon, is having a forgiving attitude. In Colossians, the third chapter in verse 13, we see there the Apostle Paul speaking about some things that we need to put on. As he talks about the lifestyle of one who's been buried with Christ and rises to walk in newness of life, Colossians, the third chapter, speaks about that newness of life and gives a picture for us of what it looks like as we're setting our affection on things above and not on things on the earth. And when we do that, there's going to be some things we put off and some things we put on. And in the midst of talking about these various qualities that we're to put on, that are a part of the inward person, a part of our heart, he mentions there in verse 13 this need for us to have this forgiving heart, this forgiving attitude. He says, bearing with one another and forgiving each other. If a man has a complaint against any, even as Christ forgave you, so you also do. And so we need to have that forgiving attitude. And notice again who the example is of forgiving attitude there brought out in that verse. As Christ forgave you, so you also do. There is nobody who has ever treated us or will ever treat us as poorly as we have treated God and His Son. And yet Jesus wants every single one of us to be forgiven of every sin that we've committed against God. That's His attitude toward us. He doesn't hold a grudge against us. When we have sinned against Him, He hasn't said, well, I don't think I want that person to ever be able to receive the blessings my death has made possible. Instead, His attitude is, I want that person to receive forgiveness. He doesn't hold a grudge or bitterness or resentment. He still wants the best, even for those who have treated Him poorly. And so we ought to have that same attitude. Nobody's mistreated us like we've mistreated God or His Son, but when people do mistreat us, we ought to have this attitude that says, I want the best for them. I'm not holding a grudge. I'm not holding resentment. I desire what is best for them, no matter how poorly they may have treated me. In Luke, the 23rd chapter, in verse 34, we see how this forgiving attitude, this forgiving heart of Jesus was manifested in something that He did and said here. As He was being crucified there in Luke's account of the crucifixion, and you remember what He said there about these people who were guilty of delivering Him up unfairly to be crucified. He'd done absolutely nothing wrong, and yet they treated Him terribly. And you remember what Jesus said in connection with these people. He didn't lash out in vengeance against them. Instead, He said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Now, Jesus wasn't there negating the fact that there is something needed from us to receive forgiveness from God. Jesus recognized that these people who were guilty of this would have to come to God on His terms, and many of them did that in Acts 2. But He was expressing in His plea that He doesn't hold any bitterness or resentment towards them. Instead, even though these people were treating Him so terribly, Jesus was expressing that He still desired the best for them. It was His desire for them to be forgiven, even though they had mistreated Him so much. And that's the example of forgiveness that we need to strive to follow. It's not our job to render vengeance against those who mistreat us. Vengeance belongs to God. Sin is going to be punished on the day of judgment, but that's God's doing. That's God's end of the stick. He's going to take care of that. It's our job to desire and strive to pursue that which is best for others, regardless of how much they may have mistreated us, showing that forgiving attitude. But a fifth and final characteristic of Jesus that we'll consider here this afternoon that we need to strive to emulate is this characteristic, this attitude of endurance. Jesus demonstrated endurance in part through that forgiving attitude that He had as He was suffering there on the cross. He didn't compromise the truth. He didn't choose to do that which was wrong just because He was suffering so terribly, but He still chose to do what was right, even though He was faced with so much hardships. And that's the idea of endurance. Endurance is about doing what is right, regardless of how great of difficulties we might be facing. If you turn over to Hebrews, the 12th chapter, in Hebrews, the 12th chapter, this follows upon the chapter in which we have all these examples of people who walked by faith. The context of these examples being given here in Hebrews 11 is the Hebrews writer was expressing the need for endurance and patience to these Christians that he's addressing. And he says, think about all these people who were faced with such trials, and it would have been so easy for them to give in and not do what was right. Think about how Abraham was tested when he was asked to offer his son Isaac as a sacrifice, and he could have said, well, I'm willing to follow what God asked to an extent, but not to that extent. That would be too much. Think about all these examples he gives in chapter 11 of people who determined to walk by faith, even when it wasn't at all easy to do so. And then when we get to chapter 12, he says in verse 1, "Let us also, seeing we are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses," we've got all these examples of people who've gone before, who have walked by faith, even when it wasn't easy to do so. They endured and did what was right. He says, "So let us follow that example, lay aside every weight and the sin which does so easily beset us, and let us run with patience or endurance the race that is set before us." And then in verse 2, he comes to the most perfect example, even better than all the examples he gave in chapter 11, the most perfect example of someone who showed endurance when faced with hardships, and that is the example of Jesus. He says, "Looking unto Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who's endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, that you don't grow weary, fainting in your souls." He says, think about all the things that Jesus suffered. He suffered a lot more than any of us have, yet he endured and did what was right, even in the midst of all those trials. So when you think about what he's done, that ought to encourage us to do the same thing when we face hardships, to endure through that. Don't be like the seed that fell in the stony places, where people receive the truth and submit to it, at least part of it for a time, but when hard times come, choose to reject the will of God in one area or another. That's the opposite of endurance. Endurance is about having the type of attitude that says, no matter what I face in life, in good times and in bad, I'm going to submit wholeheartedly to all that God expects of me. There's no greater example of doing that than the example of Jesus Christ. When we think about all that he suffered, and yet he still chose to go through with what he knew was the Father's will for him. And that determination to go through with all of this, again, all of these things we're looking at here this afternoon, really begins in the heart. And it began in the heart with Jesus. Jesus had a heart that had a level of commitment to doing what was right that led him to determine, I am going to submit to the will of the Father no matter how difficult it is to do so. That was what he valued, prioritized above all. And that depth of commitment then led him to do what was right even through these trying circumstances that Jesus faced. If you look over in Matthew chapter 16, in Matthew chapter 16, verses 21 through 24, there we see that Jesus was telling his disciples about how he was going to have to go to Jerusalem, suffer many things of the elders and chief priests and scribes, and be killed, and the third day be raised up. We touched a few weeks ago in a Wednesday night Bible study in the class that meets out here on the mental pain that Jesus would have faced to have known in advance that he was going to suffer all these things. Not just have to go through them and face that hardship at the time. Jesus knew in advance all this was coming. And this was what he had to look forward to, knowing I'm going to suffer all these things. And when he tells his disciples he's going to suffer all these things, his disciples, they think, well, we don't want that for you. Peter rebukes him in verse 22. We want you to do what's right, but we don't want you to have to go through all this. That's not our idea of submitting to the will of the Father. And so then in verse 23, Jesus turns and rebukes Peter, says, "Get thee behind me, Satan." Peter was promoting Satan's will by trying to prevent Jesus from doing that which was the Father's will for him. Jesus makes it clear, I'm going to go through with this no matter how difficult it may be. And it's in that context that he then says in verse 24, "If any man would come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me." Jesus says, that's what I'm doing here. I'm bound to determine. I'm denying myself. I'm taking up my cross. In a literal sense, Jesus died on a cross. But he's saying here, I'm determined to do whatever the Father's will is for me, no matter how difficult it might be. I've got that depth of commitment. I've got that attitude that says, I just want to do what's right in life, no matter how challenging it may be. He says, if you want to truly be my disciple, you need to have that same level of commitment, that same heart that will then lead you to endure through whatever you must go through. We don't have to die on a literal cross like Jesus did, but we need to have that same determination to go through whatever we must face in order to submit faithfully to the will of God. And that's really what endurance is all about. And so as we come back to this command here in Philippians 2 and verse 5, have this mind in you which was also in Christ Jesus, we can see not only in the outward actions, in what he did, the words that he spoke, but we can see in his character, his heart, the inward man. We can see in Jesus one whose heart was right, one who was full of love, determined to put the Father's will above his own will, determined to put the needs of others above his own comforts and pleasures. He was one who was humble, not seeking vainglory for self, but seeking to serve others, do what was beneficial for them and exalt the Father. He was one who was meek, allowing the Father to have his way with him, direct him where he wanted him to go, and also having that meekness, that attitude towards others. He was one who was forgiving, is forgiving, and he is all these things still, but he is forgiving and he is willing to forgive us in spite of the ways in which we've mistreated him. And he's also one who demonstrated great endurance, doing what was right no matter how difficult it was. And these are just some of the things that are a part of Jesus' character that we ought to strive to emulate as we endeavor to truly be his disciples and walk in his footsteps. For those who are here this afternoon who are not yet Christians, we'd encourage you to think about what Jesus has done for you. Think about the love that he has for you. Think about the willingness he has to forgive you, the things he asks of us as he demands of us that we follow in his steps, be his disciples. It doesn't even compare to the great things he's done for us. The blessings that he offers us are far, far greater than the demands that come with being a faithful child of God. We want to each be encouraged to make that choice to commit ourselves wholeheartedly to God, recognizing the depth of that commitment, but also recognizing it still doesn't compare to what Jesus has done for us. But if you're ready to accept those blessings that Jesus has made possible for you because of his love for you, because of his willingness to forgive you, then we'd encourage you to, as a repentant believer, make the choice to put him on in baptism here this afternoon. We'd love to assist you with that if you have that need and desire. You can let us know here this afternoon. If you're someone who's a Christian who needs to ask for the prayers of the congregation, we can help you with that as well. In either case, won't you come forward as we stand and sing?